Hello, welcome to New World Witchery, the search for American traditional witchcraft. I'm Corey.
And I'm Lane.
If you're looking for a podcast on traditional American folk magic, we hope you'll stay tuned.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the many definitions of witchcraft.
And then in the second half, we'll have an interview with Juniper and Dr. Brendan Myers of the Standing Stone Garden Gate Pod Show.
We hope you'll enjoy it.
Thanks for listening. All right, so today we have tasked ourselves with the unenviable job of defining witchcraft.
Ooh.
I know. It sounds like it's going to be a laugh riot, right? But the way we kind of come at this is we think that there are sort of four approaches you can make when dealing with the term witch.
Mm-hmm.
There is a religious side to it. There's a practical side to it. There's a shamanic side to it. And then there is a fourth category, which we're sort of loosely terming magical lifestyle. And, you know, these are all definitions that may not actually subscribe to. What?
It sounds like a condom.
Magical lifestyle for her pleasure. So, I know, Lane, that you kind of come at witchcraft sort of more religiously than I do.
Hmm. I don't know. It's funny. Working with you has made me see the more practical side of it and really enjoy that more.
Oh, okay.
So I think while I do agree with you, I think I'm shifting more towards that other side.
Excellent. Soon I will have won you over to my side.
All shall be assimilated.
Yes. Come to the dark side. We have cookies. So yes, but from your perspective, even as you're making that transition, when you use the word witch,
mm-hmm.
what comes to mind first and foremost?
Not a good thing, unfortunately.
Really? Oh, no.
I still have the image of the green face and the cone hat and the wart and, you know, like just for a split second, but then I remember myself and...
And that is, that's a definition of witch that we're not actually addressing here. There is this whole other category of witchcraft and witches, which is the historical view of witches and the sort of, I don't want to call it media view because I think it also exists in literature. So maybe the fable or fairy tale version of a witch.
Yeah.
Which can tie into some of these other aspects, but separate from it. We're not really going to get into defining that in this episode, I don't think.
Right.
But, okay, so religiously, what does it mean to you to be a witch?
Well, I tend to think of the religious side. Like, I tend to call that paganism more than I would...
Ah, okay.
You know, the witch side. Like, witch is more practical to me. And I'm pretty sure it is for you as well.
Mm-hmm. But with... Okay, so then you've got... the witch side of yourself sort of allotted into the practical side.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear people referring to their paganism as their witchcraft, is it hard for you to connect those two mentally, or do you kind of understand where they're coming from?
No, because I think I do that as well, because paganism is a big part of my witchcraft. So...
Do you think that paganism is maybe not a prerequisite, but sort of the preferred mode of religion for witchcraft?
Yes, definitely.
And why is that?
It just lends itself well to it.
I would agree with that.
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that if you're gonna look at world religions, the one place where witchcraft can be fairly comfortable is in a pagan setting. Now, that's historically, that may not always have been true. I know that the Romans were just as bad as persecuting witches, quote-unquote, as, you know, the Christians who came after them
mm-hmm.
were. But in the modern meaning of the word pagan, I think that's the default witch religion.
Right.
And that's not to say, I personally think that you can actually be any religion and be a witch, but again, that's because I'm coming at it from that practical standpoint.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that, though. You know, I think... And we're going to talk more about this later, but I think, you know, everyone has a little bit of magic in their life, whether they acknowledge it or not. I think it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And I think that paganism is probably the most embracing of that idea. They're very willing to say not only is there magic in everyone's life, but it's sort of everyone's duty to engage that magic in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Even the pagans who don't necessarily cast spells, they do see a sort of natural magic in the way the world functions, I think.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
And it's interesting to me in that situation because those pagans who don't cast spells but do see the natural world as magical are really, they're sort of the other side of the coin from science.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're complementary to each other because science sees a world full of wonders that it's trying to explain with the tools it has available. And I think that, you know, that magical mentality of paganism is the other side of that, saying, you know, well, we've got a different set of tools, but we're also trying to make sense of this universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
Thanks, I think so. It gets me up and going in the morning, so better than a cup of coffee. Well, okay, so we've talked a little bit about religious. The practical side, that's my way of thinking of witchcraft, is it's something you do.
Okay, so talk a little more in depth about that. What do witches do?
Ooh,
give some specific examples. I feel like a teacher writing a test.
Indeed.
Show your work.
Pop quiz by Professor Lane. The witches, I think, do a set specific number of tasks. It's interesting because I think that each witch sort of has a set of, I don't want to make it sound like they have a set of superpowers. It's not like they're X-Men or something. But I think most witches sort of follow a path where certain things become developed.
Mm-hmm.
And they have certain skills that come to the forefront. For example, you know, they may be very good at divination. So good, in fact, that divination, they are able to douse for water with a near-perfect success rate. Or, for example, witches may be really, really good at contacting the dead. They may be really good at getting in touch with someone's relatives and acting as sort of a medium for that person. But maybe not so good at love spells. You know, I think that's fairly normal. But I think there are a certain set of skills, I don't know if I can enumerate them all, but a certain set of skills that, you know, if I see a couple of them in a person, I sit there and go, oh, that's a witch.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have to really narrow that down, I would say, you know, there's clearly this necromancy side of it, the communicating with the dead, the spirits of the other world, ancestors, things like that. And then I think that there's definitely this divination, this ability to read signs and omens and portents of the future, portents of the present. I don't know. Can you have a portent of the present? Is that?
I don't know.
I guess the conditions of the present. I don't really know how that works. I think that weather magic, definitely.
That's what I feel close to. That I've worked with pretty much since the beginning.
Your storm. That's what you're telling me. Yeah, weather magic is there. People who can influence other people's attitudes and behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
That can be love, that can be hate, that can be making somebody, you know, go crazy, you know.
Speaking of that, I've met a few people like that. But I would totally not call them a witch. Mm-hmm. It was just that they were pretty much emotional vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Just very manipulative. But it came so easy to them. Mm-hmm. You know, very charismatic type of mm-hmm. people. So, even if you can do this type of stuff, it doesn't necessarily make you a witch. I guess is the point I'm making.
I could see that. I think that there's definitely, there almost has to be a combination of a few
right.
things in play.
Mm-hmm. So, do you think there has to be an awareness as well to, like, calling oneself a witch?
Well, I mean, I think to call oneself a witch, you certainly have to be aware, because if you're not aware of those abilities, you're not going to call yourself a witch. But I think what you're getting at is, can somebody who does these things unconsciously, would I look at them and go, oh, that's a witch?
Right.
Would I think that they're a witch?
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to say yes to that. It's also really hard for me to say no to that, because you know, the examples that come to my mind are I see a lot of Catholic practitioners who really, for all religious intents and purposes, they are Catholic. They go to Mass, they worship God and Jesus, and pay homage to the saints and to Mary, and that's what they do. But there's this other side of what they do that, you know, they'll pray novenas for very specific needs, or they'll light candles to specific saints to gain specific favor. They'll bury a statue of St. Joseph upside down in their yard to sell their house.
Right. That reminds me of praying to St. Anthony as well for a lost item.
Absolutely.
Which has actually, at my old job, was suggested to me when I lost, you know, just like my keys or something random. And, you know, a fellow coworker who was Catholic said, oh, well, did you pray to St. Anthony, you know, to help you find it? And it just, it struck me as, because I have a specific spell that, or I guess a little chant that I say when I find, that my friends and I wrote forever ago, whenever I'm trying to find something. And it's had a pretty damn good success rate. So, but anyway, it just,
yeah, no,
it goes back to what you're saying, that, yeah, it's, and once again, what I was saying, that there's a little bit of magic in everything, whether it's being called magic or not.
Mm-hmm. And in that situation, like, I don't know, I look at somebody who has, you know, who does those little chants and charms and spells, and I mean, I certainly look at those and go, those are spells.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, even if they would acknowledge them as prayers, I think they go a little deeper than that. I don't think that they're simply an expression of gratitude or a simple request for a favor. I think that in a lot of cases, like the Tony, the Anthony,
mm-hmm.
You have a specific chant that you use that's a spell to me. And so in those cases, I look at those people and I may not go, they're a witch, but I look at them and I go, they just need a pointy hat and some shoes, some stripy stockings, and we're good to go. Like, they're right at the cusp of what I would consider witchhood. What about you? I mean, what makes a person a witch to you?
Well, I hate to rehash what you just said, but it's basically the same thing that you think of.
But you, is it awareness? Does the awareness have to be there?
Yeah, definitely, I would say. Because, I mean, if you look at it from a different side, if a Catholic saw me with, say, a witch ladder, which looks, some people even call witches rosaries, you know, that looks fairly close to that type of thing, you know, you're working with knots or beads or whatever you happen to put on it, and saw me lighting a candle for something and saying a chant for something, they could say, well, that person does what I do. That means they're Catholic. No, I'm not Catholic. So, I think
that's a good point.
Yeah, I think the
self-reflection.
Yeah, really. the self-titling of witch has to be there.
Okay, yeah, I can totally see that. Like, I would not want somebody seeing what I do and going, oh, he's a, you know, he's basically a Catholic with pointy shoes and a pointy hat. It's because it's not quite that simple.
But so, I mean, but at the same time, but it's what you were saying, you know, like, if I suddenly decided that, you know, this is funny to even think about, if paganism and witchcraft weren't for me and that, you know, I needed to worship Jesus and the Christian God, then, yeah, I might be pretty close to being Catholic. So it's like what you're saying, they're very close to being a witch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
and this is not to dump on Catholics and say,
no,
all Catholics are just waiting to be pagan.
No, not at all.
Witchy or anything like that. Because, I mean, I you know, working with hoodoo, there are plenty of basically Baptist or at least Protestant people doing magic.
Yeah.
And, you know,
well, I mean, they use the cross a lot in hoodoo as well.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, look at Curanderismo and Brujeria, things like Brujeria. I mean, that's straight up witchcraft, but it's rooted in Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it only goes back to Catholicism again. Not dumping on Catholics, I promise.
We like Catholics.
We do like Catholics.
We like Christians. It's just,
they taste great.
they burn great.
Shh, get down. but, yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the hoodoo practitioners. Those are usually Protestant in some way. Powwows tend to be Lutheran or occasionally Anabaptists of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Calvinist.
Calvinist, yeah. That's good. That's very broad. So there is. There's this, you know, there's not this isolation of, you know, Catholics are fairly witchy, but no other Christians are. I think that, you know, people can be up to that point of being witchy, but I like what you said, you know, that self-awareness is what pushes them over the edge into witchcraft.
Yeah.
So I agree with that. Speaking of going over the edge, that brings us to definition number three.
Shamanism.
Yeah. Now, this is a word that, for us in the United States, is a little harder to use because even though it has its precedence in Siberian culture with the Tungu people, and she's making the I don't know facey thing. And I believe that's correct, that it's a word that stems from the Tungu people, or maybe a Turkish word. It's been sort of broadly applied to a lot of fairly aboriginal or animistic cultures, mm-hmm. For people who can go into the spirit world to do work that will affect the mundane world. And in America, and by America I mean the United States of America, it seems like... we have a little bit of a problem with that because it's a word that somewhere along the line in history got grafted onto Native Americans and First Nations mm-hmm. peoples, and so
that's the only thing I can think of is when I hear the word shaman.
And that's really what I think of too. Like I think of the medicine man mm-hmm. of these Native tribes,
right?
And so it's really really hard for me to use the word shaman to mean witch. Because it feels like I'm stealing from a Native American culture. However, I realize that that is just my United Statesian attitude towards
right.
it. And I know
not
that,
everyone feels that way.
Yeah, and there are places that have a much closer connection with their Aboriginal cultures that would use the word shaman, and it would be completely valid. I mean, even in the United States, it's still completely valid. It's just harder for me to hear it and not feel that twinge of hundreds of years of ingrained guilt over.
Yeah. but that's interesting, though, because we use hoodoo, and that's more of an African, and, the races is what I'm saying, like.
And it's a fair call. I do think, one, hoodoo is not as isolated to the African American community.
No, I agree.
And I think even Catherine Ironwood goes so far as to say, historically, whites practiced it on par with blacks. It seemed to be predominant in black communities, but there were usually quite a few whites doing it too.
I wonder if it just wasn't as recorded as well in the white community.
Probably not. Probably because the pressure to blend in
mm-hmm.
was there. And not that there wasn't pressure to blend in on the other side of that, but...
Anyway, we sort of got off topic. I'm sorry.
No. It's a good point, though, because you bring it up and you say, hoodoo.
Because we feel guilty for saying shaman, but because of the race issue. But mm-hmm.
But then this hoodoo.
We don't feel that. I think that's funny.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there actually are people who might feel guilty over it. I personally don't because I look at it as much a part of my Southern heritage as I
Me
do.
Me too. That's exactly why. And see, we do not have, a very large true Native American or First Nations culture here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
they've all been moved west pretty much.
Right. We sort of robbed ourselves of those people. And then
right.
in the process, of course, we robbed them blind too, which
yeah.
is just awful.
So I can see more, identify more with shamanism if you lived in an area that say had more of a Native American, population.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Like, if somebody said they were a shaman and they're in, New Mexico or Arizona,
right.
where there's still a fairly large, Native population out there, it's a little easier for me to hear that and not, feel that inner recoiling at it. But yeah, so it's interesting. But as far as the nature of that kind of witchcraft, I tend to think of that as being very, very specifically, it's religious in one way, but it's also basically a specific kind of witchcraft that involves going to the other world. It doesn't necessarily have to do with any other spells other than going to the other world.
I agree. That's exactly what I think of. Like, I pretty much think of it like if you have... And I never see a shaman indoors in my head.
Mm.
Like, I always see him, like, out in a circle of stones or something like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I conjure that image, but I do.
That's a fair enough image, I guess. I don't know.
It's like if they're doing any sort of spell or if there's any sort of like altar set up inside, I automatically think witch, not shaman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
And for me, I mean, witch you know, which certainly does have an indoor side to it, but we go to the crossroads and, yeah, and do our work outdoors quite a bit too.
But it's different.
Yeah, it's not quite the same thing. It's not like going on a vision quest or anything like that.
Yeah, which is what I think of when I hear shaman.
You kind of picture, you know, somebody going wandering out in the desert or the wilderness for a couple of days and, you know, meeting with the spirit guide and, mm-hmm, and, you know, going into the other world and bringing back knowledge for their tribe.
Yeah.
And you know, I can absolutely see how that is witchcraft, mm-hmm, in a way.
But I don't necessarily know if it makes them a witch.
Right. And it's not something I identify with as far as witchcraft.
Doesn't
mean I don't think that other people are wrong for saying it. I absolutely do think that can be a form of witchcraft. So if that's your preferred, you know, brand of witchy medicine, then enjoy. So I think we've waxed on about shamanism for long enough.
Yeah.
So the final thing I think that'd be worth talking about is something that kind of blends the religious and the practical and maybe even the shamanic together a little bit. Uh-huh. And that is the witch as magical lifestyle. And we had a little bit of a discussion about this earlier. And I think you referenced it earlier, didn't you? You said sort of a little bit of witch in every person.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily magic in every person, but magic in every person's life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether they acknowledge it as magic or not, I still believe it's there. And I think if you start looking, you'll see that it's there as well.
How so?
Just in little things that people do.
Like these little traditions that people build on without realizing that they're basically engaging in magic.
Right. Like, I can't think of any examples right now, but...
Well, you mentioned one a while ago, birthday candles.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I think that's a really kind of funny holdover, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you blow out candles and make a wish. Well, that's
a spell right there.
Yeah, it sounds like a spell to me.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know, I'm sort of contradicting myself because, like I said earlier, it's the acknowledgement.
Right.
But at the same time, just because you do magic doesn't necessarily mean you have to be a witch. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, there's a little bit of magic in everyone's lives.
Right. And then how you... I think how you cross that bridge from you know, just, you know, punching the top of your car every time you go under a yellow light.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Into outright witchcraft is you recognize all of these little things in your life that are magical and say, hey, that means that there's something bigger. There's magic everywhere,
mm-hmm,
and I want to be part of that.
Right. Like, why do people do that? Is it because I've always understood it to be good luck for, like, maybe not getting a ticket or maybe not even getting hit for going through a yellow light? Like, you know, why do you touch the mm-hmm the top of your car? And it's funny because my friend, she'll slap her leg, kiss her hand, and then touch. And I just hit my leg and then touch. And, I mean, there's, like, so there's variance on it.
Yeah, because I do kiss then touch, but I don't do the slap the leg.
And then another one I thought of was knock on wood.
Oh, yeah.
Many people will say knock on wood. But, you know, some people will actually feel the need to find wood and physically knock on it while they say it.
Mm-hmm. Or at least something that looks vaguely wood-like.
And right.
Barring that, they'll knock on their head.
Right, and sort of make the joke that my head is wood. And but I've also heard the phrase touch wood.
Yes.
So there's variance on that as well. Just that there's, you know, variance on spells and you know, different types of mm-hmm magic. So I just think that's funny.
It's neat. Yeah. It's neat how many little tiny things kind of add up to your everyday magic. I mean, how many people know rain, go away, come again another day?
Exactly.
I mean, that's, you know, and people look up and they say, ah, you know, rain, go away, or starlight, star bright, first star mm-hmm I see tonight. And there are all these little things that we've had built into us that are simply magical.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the witch is the one that finally looks at it and goes, oh, there's magic here. Let's do something about that.
Right.
Let's work with that. Yeah, I mean, with the magical lifestyle, I think what we're looking at is sort of an integration of the other three kinds.
Right.
You know, not necessarily a summation like the best of the best kind of witch is this, but more of a you get a complete package,
right?
If you do it this way, mm-hmm. You get this sort of secrets in plain sight.
Why are we drawn to that? Why do witches like that?
I don't know. I think it comes from this need to have a magical lifestyle to know that, you know, when you go home at night, you can walk through your house and touch 10 different things that all have magical significance to you, even if, you know, anybody else who walked in would just see, you know, a little piece of wood or a shell, or might see a children's book of nursery rhymes, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that this magical lifestyle type of witch is going to be constantly engaged,
right,
in magic, mm-hmm. even if they're not constantly casting spells, even if they're not constantly, you know, doing religious magic or anything like that. They're going to be constantly surrounded by magic and aware of it.
Yeah, it's almost like an inside joke with you and the gods.
Yeah, yeah.
Or other witches
and spirits.
Yeah.
And whatever else you've got floating around out there.
Because I know when I was still living at home, and, you know, I couldn't keep an altar, but it was still really important to me. So I did have one. It was just very, you know, secrets in plain sight. To anyone else, it would have just looked like a decorative type of, because it was a round table that I'd had for years, and had just a white tablecloth on it, which it had always had. And I just put, you know, a vase with dried flowers and a couple candles. And I had a small perfume bottle that I put rainwater in that, you know, to my mother, it just looked like I liked the bottle. And so it could look very decorative and just pretty,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, I could look at it and smile and kind of have like that secret thrill that mm-hmm. I know what that means.
Right. And it's funny because that's almost, I bet like when you got close to it or when you touched it, it was sort of like it took you away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got that little bit of that shamanic thing going on there.
Oh.
You know, it takes you into that other space. But at the same time, it also allows you to have this sort of religious connection.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then, you know, if you ever needed to cast a spell, you know, it's like one of those candles. Be like, I need this.
Right.
Work this out for me, please.
Right. I did a lot of knot magic with it. Mm-hmm. I would put the knot into the flower petals, sort of cover it up. That way, you know, no questions asked. And mm-hmm. So
yeah, I think that there's definitely some strong value to that magical lifestyle type mm-hmm. of a witchery. So yeah. So that's our stab in the dark attempt at defining witchcraft. I'm sure that there are plenty of other people out there who have much more concise and better definitions than ours, but we hope that you've gotten a little something out of this.
Mm-hmm. And if you can think of any magic in the mundane sort of, like, examples, I would love to hear them. So, if you can think of anything else besides, you know, knock on wood or touch the car running through a yellow light, then let us know. I'd really be interested to hear about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, all right. That does it for this segment. We will be back after the break. Lane has just reminded me. We have a contest currently going on our blog. It will be going on until midnight on February 28th, 2010. If you would like to participate, what we're looking for is weather lore. So if you have any weather lore from your family or from your local region, please email us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
Or you can leave a comment on the blog at newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
And we will put your name into a random drawing for a copy of Catherine Ironwood's Hoodoo Root and Herb Magic, I believe is the title. I can never remember if it's Root and Herb or Urban Root, but either way, it is a phenomenal book on conjure herbs and roots. So, yes, please do enter. We would love some more submissions,
mm-hmm.
And we will likely be reading your lore on the air at some point. So, please do submit.
All
right.
Okay.
Well, after this break, we will have an interview with Dr. Brendan Myers and Juniper, the hosts of the Standing Stone and Garden Gate Pod Show, so please stick around.
Standing Stone
and Garden Gate,
a podcast for
artistic and creative,
intelligent and philosophizing,
crafty and practical,
deep thinking,
hardworking
pagans
and witches.
Visit StonegatePodShow.net
or else.
Okay, we are back and we're here with Brendan Myers and Juniper from the Standing Stone and Garden Gate podcast. It's an excellent podcast. Please do check it out. The website is... I will actually let them do the website because I don't remember it off the top of my head. But guys, welcome to New World Witchery.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the website address is stonegatepodshow.net.
That's it. Yes. What she said. And we'll definitely have links for that in our show notes as well. Thank you guys for coming on today. We're happy to have you here.
Well, it's a delight to be talking with you, too. Thank you.
Thanks.
So let's get started.
Yeah.
Let's get this party going.
Juniper, I know that you you are a hedge witch. Is that correct?
I am indeed.
Can you define that a little bit for our listeners? What does it mean to be a hedge witch?
Alrighty. Well, first we need to define exactly what a hedge is.
Okay.
You know, why use that word? Now, in the practical sense, a hedge goes back to the European tradition of hedge laying. So even as far back as the Iron Age, the European and North American landscape has been crisscrossed by hedgerows. Mm-hmm. Now, a hedgerow is a carefully landscaped and intricate layer of plant life. These often have shrubs, herbs, and trees, and they are boundaries for farmsteads, pastures, villages, ditches, and roads. Usually they are at the very edge of a human settlement, so they were keeping, you know, the wilderness and the wildlife out of the fields. Crossing a hedge often meant crossing a boundary of some sort, such as going from a wheat field into a cow pasture or going onto someone else's property. Now, a hedgerow is not just a boundary, but it's also a protective home and shelter for all kinds of wildlife, such as rabbits and birds, as well as providing shade and acting as a windbreak. So you often also have berry and fruit-bearing trees. You also have healing herbs, as well as baneful herbs and plants growing in them. So from the practical side of things, you can see that as a metaphor for hedge witchcraft in the sense that it is at the borderlands. It's usually a bit of an outsider path. It is often very much involved with animals and with plants and with nature, but also still oriented towards community service. And it has a lot to do with root work and wort cunning and herbalism, both healing and baneful. It's also a metaphor for thresholds and specifically the borderlands between this world and the next, between reality and dream. So it becomes yet another word for what modern pagans usually refer to as the veil. So a hedge witch is also a shamanic practitioner, and that's pretty much that.
Excellent. All right. That's a very, very good definition of
yeah,
that.
Definitely.
Thank you.
A little bit long-winded, but...
I'd rather you take the time to explain it thoroughly than have people, you know, going, oh, you know, a hedge witch is these three words and I'm suddenly a hedge witch. So.
Yes. Well, and the word hedge witch has become very, very popular. Even, you know, a certain Llewellyn author that many people do not respect has written a book on hedge witchery.
Yes.
And it's become synonymous with someone who is essentially a kitchen witch or a solitary Wiccan mucking about with herbs in her kitchen or in her garden. And that's not an exact definition. The main emphasis is on the shamanic practice, mm-hmm. as well as on the fact that these are not the kind of witches who harm none. These are witches who walk the crooked path, the path that winds and twists between the left-hand path and the right-hand path, depending on what is needed. I have no problem with people calling themselves, you know, whatever they want. You know, far be it for me to tell people whether or not their path is valid.
Mm-hmm.
But a hedge witch is not a solitary Wiccan.
Right.
A hedge witch is a shamanic practitioner of folk magic.
It steals my heart when people say things like that. I love it. Love it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad.
Well, okay. Now, you both have done a lot of traveling as well, right? How does that affect how you practice?
Well, for my part, I've traveled now in every province in Canada. I think 6 or 7 U.S. states and 7 European countries. And so I find that I have had a lot of contact with pagan culture in all those different places. Sometimes only a very, small bit of contact, perhaps only a couple of days in some cases. But it has taught me the extraordinary variety of things that people do under the name of pagan, and yet at the same time, an astonishing similarity as well, that people do generally have a small number of relatively common ideas that people share and appreciate and enjoy together, even while they also, enjoy different and diverse things too. It means that no matter where you go or what you do, there's always a sense in which what you will find is familiar and at the same time surprising. I find that a very delightful thing.
Definitely. So since you travel so much and come in contact with different ideas, have you ever, saw something and then incorporated it into, what you do now?
I think that I get a bit more. I get a bit of nostalgia for some of the places I visited from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
Junie will come into my study and she'll see me flipping through photographs of Italy and Switzerland, for instance. but to answer your question directly, I think that one of the things that all that travel has done is helped me to understand the wheel of the year a little bit better.
Interesting.
Because the way that I recall being taught about the significance of the major festivals when I first started out in Druidry, I was taught the meaning of festivals for a climate that I wasn't living in. And then when I went to live in, I lived in Ireland for nearly 5 years. And when I went to live there, suddenly I saw the environment around me and it made a heck of a lot more sense,
Right, you actually see snowdrops coming up through the snow in February at that point.
Right. Well, here in Ottawa, where Juniper and I are right now, it's about minus 15 degrees Celsius. There's a heck of a lot of snow on the ground even still, and it will probably still be here for 6 more weeks. So the meaning of the festival changes a lot. So I think that's one of the things that helped answer your question directly. It's taught me to really appreciate the need to be aware of the actual environment that you're living in, and that your practice should in some way reflect what you actually see and perceive in the land where your home is built.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Do you adapt then how you actually practice? Like, for example, would you do you move? I don't want to call them festival dates, but do you move holiday observances in accordance with the seasons then?
Well, my own practice has very little ritual in it anyway, so that's part of what makes it a little bit difficult for me to answer your question.
Oh, okay.
I do find that I move some of the meanings of the festivals around a little bit. Imvolk is not our primary festival of the return of spring, you see, because we're still up to our neck in winter here.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, we save that for the vernal equinox instead. Instead, Imbolg is the last festival of winter as opposed to the first one of spring. Ugh. So you do just a slight shift in meanings, in a way.
We go out and we make ice sculptures, for instance, and sometimes there's competitions for it. And we have ice skating races in the rink or in the canals. And we have tag races along tracks that we pad down in the snow in advance and things like that.
Polar bear dips and things along those lines. A polar bear dip is I don't know if you do it in the States, it's a crazy Canadian tradition where you get very, very drunk, and then you get very, very naked, and then you go jump in some very, very cold water.
I've heard of that, but...
2 out of 3 of those are fantastic.
And I think we may have inherited that from the Vikings somewhere along the way.
But actually, one of the things that I did pick up from some friends of mine when I was traveling in England is a very short and particular list of what liquids to pour out in offerings to places that look like they might be the home of a local spirit.
Oh, interesting.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I now find that I don't just pour out anything that I happen to have in my fridge. That instead, if I see a tree or a rock or a little alcove in the ground, it looks like it might belong to a wight or a gnome or a nissa. Or something like that. Also, I find myself using the words that some of my friends use, then instead of going and getting a slice of bread from my fridge that already happens to be there, I'll go to the local shop and I'll buy a bottle of whiskey, because that's one of the things that's traditionally given to the thing that I think might be living there, you know?
Now, that's interesting, because for myself, having never been to Europe, I don't do as much of the European-style offerings, such as a scotch or whiskey. I find that I'm more influenced by, you could almost say, sort of First Nations, where you don't give generally to nature spirits things like scotch or whiskey, because alcohol is a poison. Instead, I tend to do things more like smudge, sage smudge sticks, and tobacco, and tying, you know, like a red thread that I'd woven myself, and things like that. So that's interesting.
Absolutely. Now, Juniper, do you has the traveling that you have done, has that affected how you relate to land spirits and the land around you?
Very much so. I grew up in a family, in an immigrant family. So I grew up with that yearning for the old country. And it wasn't until I turned about 19 and hit the road and started to travel around North America that I really began to appreciate North America and New World witchery. Before that, you know, I was the solitary Wiccan who was all obsessed about doing everything Celtic. And, you know, and while the Celtic influence is still there for me, I now have learned to really adapt to the landscape wherever I am at. And it also, you know, North America has such a diverse landscape. You know, you go to places like California or British Columbia, you can go from snow-topped mountains to desert to, you know, vineyards within a day. And so you learn to be much more adaptable. And you learn to be much more fluid in your practice, because the way that you would relate to a desert region is different from the way you would relate to a seashore.
Definitely. Absolutely. That sort of resonates with me, since, you know, the United States is such a big country. And, you know, so there's so many different
regions,
New World
pockets,
practices that go on. So it's...
And some of them seem related, some of them seem completely disparate. I mean, it's
right. So, yeah. So that makes sense that you would have to be fluid, because, you know, say if two siblings grew up, you know, as witches in one area, and then they both moved, you know, 500 miles from the other, then they could be in two totally different places, and they would have to adapt their practices. So, yeah, that definitely makes sense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we know nothing about, you know, having to adapt after you move along.
I love colonial culture. I love the pioneer attitude that you have in the New World. A great example would be, I was having a conversation with a friend from England, and she said, oh, I don't have any witch bottles in my house, because witch bottles specifically deflect all kinds of magic, and I, you know, don't necessarily want to deflect all kinds of magic from me. And I said, what do you mean? You know, I'm from North America, and we use witch bottles for any possible purpose.
Right.
And we put anything that might be at hand in it, because we have that pioneer spirit where we make do with what we have, and we try to make it do as many different things as possible. Yeah, so we don't get as bogged down by, I think, by the rules, and I hate to use the D word, but by dogma.
Well, yeah. No, I know what you mean. There is, you know, there are some people who are very traditionalist and want you to abide by what was done in the old world, when it's just not practical. It's not practical
no.
in the New World.
And a lot of the times, the things that, you know, are specific to the old world, they don't grow here.
Right.
You know, and you can't get them here, you know, and our houses aren't as old, so we don't have the same kind of a hearthstone in our fireplaces as they do in old houses in England and things like that. And we have a culture of being diverse, of being adaptable, and making do with what you have. That's the pioneer spirit, and it is still strong, and it's still something to be proud of.
I agree.
I absolutely agree.
That don't grow in Europe as well, like pumpkins.
Right.
Yes, you know, pumpkins.
The carving of a jack-o'-lantern is a North American tradition, and a very, you know, marvelous magical tradition too.
Yeah.
They don't do it in Europe. They carve turnips with little candles in the center, but they don't Well, they do now. They have card faces on them, but that they imported from America, actually.
Must make it a lot... I don't think it would be quite as dramatic to smash a turnip.
So. No. It just sort of rolls around. And
yeah.
Not nearly as fun on November 1st to go around and smash everybody's turnips.
No. Well, what about... you mentioned the practices changing. Can you give us sort of some of the practices that you do on a regular basis?
Absolutely. You know, things have been a little more difficult for me for the last few months because I've just recently moved from the farm into one of the most major cities in Canada. So I've been having to adapt to be a lot more home-based.
Mm.
Whereas before, for the last few years, you know, I had a shrine to a Pona at the edge of the horse pasture that I touched every day and that I would, you know, leave a little bit of hay at. And now I don't have something like that. So I've had to become a lot more home-based. I have, how many do I have? I think I have 3 or 4 house altars set up. You know, there's just about one for every room.
We've got a green man that's on the wall across from the front door, so you can look down and bless everybody who goes in and out of our front door.
I've had to move all my spirit houses into the house because I'm the sort of person who likes to have lots of little idols or little places for spirits to come and reside and hang out, and a place where I can leave offerings. I like to use bird houses a lot. And I had to leave those all at the family farm because I didn't want to be like, okay, now we're going to go cross country and move into the city. You're coming with me. So I've had to adapt to city life a lot, and it's been a bit of a challenge. But to give you an example, just off the top of my head, Brendan has a miniature suit of armor who stands guard at our front door. And whenever I come and go, I always give him a little pat on the head. And just about a week ago, Brendan had one of those Hawaiian leis, you know, the flower necklace. He was goofing around with, so I grabbed it and I hung it on the suit of armor. And I said, there, now he's a chivalry from the time of chivalry. And he's, you know, has his flowers. And I can't take the flowers off now. Anytime I go to do it, he's like, no, I like my flowers. You know, whatever little spirit has decided to hang out in that suit of armor likes his flowers, and we can't remove them now. So it looks rather silly, but he likes them.
I'll tell you one of the things that I do as well. You know, I grew up not in the farmland, but in a small town, a village that had only about 2,000 people. And then, of course, since becoming an adult, I've had to live in cities ever since because of the jobs that I've followed. But you know what else? I can look up, and every day there's the sun and there's the moon. So the first time that I see the moon each day, I do a little salute. And if I happen to see the sun on the horizon, it's sunrise or sunset, I do a little salute there too. You know, so even when you're in the middle of the city, you're surrounded by cars and buses and advertising and noise and tall buildings and, you know, angry people. Then you can still look up and you can see there's a piece of landscape in this universe, 300,000 kilometers away. I mean, isn't that just the most exciting thing you've heard in the world? So you're still in the middle of a city, but you're way out there in the wilderness of space, and that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So make your little salute each day.
Yeah. And when we first moved to the house, one of the very first things is I unpacked my box of craft supplies and immediately made a witch's ladder and hung it up in the sunroom. And actually, it's a bit of a laugh because the sunroom is not heated. So the door is shut firmly, but every now and then it just pops open of its own free will, and we will both just turn and like, oh, you know, hello, come in and be welcome. So long as you're friendly, you can come on in. And we leave the door open for a few minutes, and then when we go to
cold.
So then when we go to shut it, we say, now if anybody wants to leave, we're shutting the door now, and sort of wait a minute, and then we shut the door. So
that's really neat. I like that.
Yeah, we live in a magical world for sure.
Oh, I agree. That's awesome. Well, with your practices, has moving changed any of your hedge crossing practices or techniques? I know Lane was curious about, you know, do you work with your fetch the same way?
You know, I haven't had much time for that since moving to the city. I've been so busy looking for work, getting unpacked and things like that. And I've been finding it quite difficult because we're in an apartment and I'm very accustomed to wrapping myself up in my blanket, in my cloak, and going out in the woods with my dog and laying down and doing my work in that way. I find it very difficult to do it laying in my bed in my apartment. I haven't yet found a place, a safe place where I can do it outdoors as yet. So I've been putting that on hold a little bit. So to make up for it, I have an altar to my fetch and to my animal spirits. And they've been getting kind of like extra goodies. You know, they're getting extra biscuits and gifts like that to sort of make up for it to them. And let's see, what else for the hedge crossing? I haven't been keeping up on my meditation or my hedge crossing much in the last few months since I moved to Ottawa.
No, neither have I, actually.
No. And I've been terrible because I get very self-conscious about it still. So having Brent in the house and still being something in a new relationship, I've been sort of putting that off a little bit. It feels a little awkward still at this point to say, well, I'm going to go and leave my body for a couple of hours. you know, please don't knock on the door.
Right.
I can definitely understand that little bit of, I hate to say embarrassment, but that's kind of what it is. I mean, like, you know, if my husband's home, and even though he wouldn't say anything and he totally understands, it would still be, I would still feel, I guess, a little silly.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that I feel that way. I think it's sort of like a childhood thing, maybe.
Right.
But yeah, I totally understand that. And it is a little bit harder to work, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's such a personal thing,
yes,
too. You know, I'm probably more likely to announce, well, I'm going to go to the bathroom now, than, you know, than announce, well, I'm going to go and, you know, do a journey now, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So.
Well, one thing you mentioned when you were describing the definition of a hedge witch, you mentioned community service as an aspect of witchcraft, and that's something that really appeals to and fascinates me. I think that that's a big part of being a witch, is being responsive to the community around you. Can you give us a little bit of what kind of community service do you do? How do you function within your community?
Well, I function a lot in the online community in the fact that I, you know, pay like a couple hundred bucks a year to host a website and forum. And, you know, I spend many, many hours getting that operating and running so that people have a place to connect and where they can post photographs and articles. And I even offer free web hosting if somebody wants to put a blog up on Walking the Hedge. They can do that. Mm-hmm. I also, within my community, I'm usually the first person who shows up at the open ritual and finds a person in charge and says, what can I do? Whenever I go to a fest or a gathering, I usually am the person who actually volunteers to clean the toilets.
Wow.
And partly, I'll admit, it's to ingratiate myself with the leaders and the elders in the community, and partly it's because I know that that needs to get done.
That would definitely be a better time to leave your body.
Yeah, really. Okay, you're going on autopilot now. Yes. When I was living out in British Columbia, out in the Kootenays, I started to develop a bit of a reputation as a witch, and I would actually have local farmers' wives and things come and knock on the door and say, you know, well, in exchange for, you know, some of this wool or in exchange for this bushel of apples or whatever, could you do a little something to bring us good luck or to, you know, help us with our mortgage and things like that. And that was really quite thrilling. I felt like I was partaking in a very ancient tradition in that way.
Absolutely. That's exactly the kind of service I was thinking of, was, you know, how you serve the people who are maybe even non-magical in your community. And I love that you've had that experience. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and a lot of it too was just having worried moms come in and, you know, track me down and say, you know, my daughter is into this stuff. I have no idea what it is. Can you explain a little bit to me?
Mm-hmm.
And I love newbies.
Uh-huh.
You know, I know a lot of people who've been practicing for a while are not friendly towards newbies, but I'm very friendly towards newbies. So, you know, I would always be more than happy to let them follow me around in my garden, not so much as some sort of mentor or teacher, but just to let them look over my shoulder and help them figure out for themselves what they like. But yeah, it was so much fun to be in a place where I could, you know, trade this for that. So there was a Quaker lady, and she did a fiber farm. So she would raise sheep and shear them and do all the old-fashioned weaving and spinning and whatnot.
You should have just seen Lane's face light up when you said that. That's like her dream.
I knit a lot, so
I crochet.
Oh, great. Yay. So, yeah, the fiber I definitely enjoy very much. So, yeah, that's exciting.
And she and I developed a bit of a rapport and a bit of friendship, as you do, you know, when you're kind of living in the middle of nowhere and our neighbors. And she would ask me to do little prayers and do little charms. And we actually did a couple of witch bottles for her around her property. And they were having difficulty with their mortgage and getting it paid because this was right around the time that the economy failed. Mm. So I did some prosperity charms for her and things like that. And in exchange, she helped me learn how to spin some of my own wool and dye it organically red. And I was using that for a long time for offerings and things like that. And it was wonderful. I really did feel like I was taking part in an ancient tradition and really being a real old style witch or cunning woman or whatever.
Oh, that's marvelous.
Yeah, that's nice.
I just love that. Well, I want to thank you both. We're about out of time for the interview, but thank you both so much. It's been really, really enlightening, and I think our listeners are just going to love this information.
Definitely thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much. I really hope that your listeners enjoyed it. We certainly enjoyed talking to you. We'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Media Astra Octera. Media Astra Octera.
I'm Oriya the Sphinx from Media Astra Octera, a podcast for witches, magicians, and others of the occult persuasion. Join me for a thought-provoking blend of magic, witchcraft, and natural science as we explore worlds both inner and outer, above and below. You can find the show on iTunes or at sphinx.libsyn.com. And I hope you'll join me in standing Media Astra Actera.
And we're back. We really hope you enjoyed that interview. We enjoyed giving it.
Yes, it was a real treat to have Dr. Myers and Juniper on our show. Please do check out their podcast. It's fantastic. They actually have interviewed us as well, and we'll be on a show either upcoming or possibly currently. And the address for that is stonegatepodshow.net. And you can certainly find that link in our show notes as well as many places all over our blog.
So they brought up a few interesting points that we wanted to sort of elaborate on and discuss a little bit. Juniper at one point talked about the hedge witch versus the kitchen witch and how that's sort of becoming, or how hedge witchery is sort of being watered down.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
a little bit, and not that kitchen witchery is any less than hedge witchery, but I do think they are different, and we should talk about that a little bit.
Yes, definitely. I mean, considering our rather rambling efforts to define witchcraft earlier in the show, I think it's a good point to make that hedge witchery, kitchen witchery, I think cottage witchery is another thing that floats around in there.
Yeah, definitely.
They all have slightly different connotations. Hedge witchery has a fairly distinct connotation of going into the other world. It's as Juniper said, and I think mm-hmm. we mentioned earlier, it's more of a shamanic type thing.
Yeah, which is funny because before we really discussed and got down to the meat of what shamanism is, I didn't really see that, but now I do. Anyway.
You have opened our eyes, oh wise and wonderful Juniper. Thank you. Yes. And I think that when you're talking more about a kitchen witch, it's somebody who works inside the home. Mm-hmm. It maybe even does that sort of magical lifestyle thing where all your secrets are in plain sight.
Right.
Your cooking is an act of magic.
Right.
Your cleaning, a lot of things on a daily basis become an act of magic.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because I would think of you sort of as a kitchen witch. And I know that sort of like, for most people, I think it gives the image of, maybe a motherly female type, but, you know, but you have your things in the kitchen that you do, and, mm-hmm. you know, you have your things around the house, so.
No, I definitely do have a magical household.
More so than I do, and
well,
and I think that's funny because you have a Christian wife, and I have a, well, I guess.
Open-minded.
Yeah,
Not that my wife's not open-minded.
No, she definitely is. Obviously, she's married to you.
But right. But you have some, you have somebody who has no predilections or
right, no religious leanings.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just think that's funny.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have that, you know, and maybe I'm a little bit more cottage than kitchen just because I have, you know, I do a lot of gardening and things like that. And I love going out in the woods and, you know, exploring out in the woods as well. And I like to, I don't know. I just kind of think of myself as a witch in general.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know how I would refine myself because I'm not a hedge witch in the terms of, you know, I don't regularly cross the hedge into the other world.
But would you say that you kind of walk the crooked path?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
That I definitely do. And, you know, I certainly do have my forays into the other world. You know, that's regular enough in my practice that it's not so much that I cross into the other world in a shamanic way, but I do often, you know, hold court with the dead. You know, I, you know, deal with the ancestors a lot.
See, and I do not. So.
So I don't know. What kind of witch are you then?
I don't know. Well, see, I mean, I don't think any witch should have to define him or herself any more than just witch necessarily, but I was just, you know, making the observation that you do sort of fit into the kitchen cottage witch.
Mold.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I can see that. I certainly do.
But I don't know what kind I'd be. A lazy kind?
You're the, what is it, the armchair.
Armchair witch, that's right.
Yeah, armchair witch. Yeah, getting ever smaller. You know, from cottage to kitchen, living room, armchair, shower stall, commode witchery.
Oh, Lord.
So I think the other thing that was just a phenomenal conversation on that interview was the city versus country aspect of witchcraft.
Right, and I think we actually got a little bit more into that in their interview of us on their podcast. So if you'd like to hear more about that, then please go listen to the episode with us on there. That sounded really
self-promotional. Listen to us in every form you can find us. You can't get enough of us.
But on a serious note, if you would like to hear a little bit more about that, then that's the place to do it. So, but anyway, about the sort of the city versus the country witch and the differences therein.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic. You know, it's something where I know that a lot of witches and a lot of pagans as well want to be closer to nature and want to be out in nature and feel that connection. That's basically the country witch mentality. And I certainly feel that myself, but I've also learned to really respect the city witch mentality of, you know, you can form a community in a way that you can't necessarily do as a solitary living out in the boonies.
Right. Well, and we were talking about that more, and it's for both types, city and country, it's still connecting to, you know, specific energies, but for a country witch, it's more in nature and to the land, and maybe to one or, you know, a couple other witches perhaps, but you know, we country witches tend to be more solitary for the most part, while city witches are connecting to that energy through other people, I would say. So it's
absolutely,
it's the same thing, just different.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, in either way, it's a struggle to make that full connection around. Because, I mean, I think city witches do definitely need some aspect of nature, even if that aspect of nature has to do with connecting to the landscape that they have in the form of a city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're like, okay, I need to connect through a rooftop garden, or, you know, I need to, you know, think of the city skyline as a jungle. You know,
right.
If that's what they do, I think that they still have to connect that way. And I think country witches still have to be able to relate to the people around them, you know, and in some ways, you know, they may never actually be part of a coven. They may never actually even meet another witch, but they need to be aware of their connection to this broader tradition of witchcraft, I think.
Right.
So there, now we've answered all your questions about witchcraft. You'll never need to listen to another podcast about witchcraft again. We're just that good. No, that's not true, because otherwise we wouldn't be back in 2 weeks, and we plan to be. Darn it. So
yeah, we hope you've enjoyed this episode. We've had a kind of a hard road making it.
Yeah, what you're hearing now is at least the third effort at recording it. Mm-hmm. Just for many, many reasons, most of which involve sleep deprivation. but we hope that this has turned out really well for you and for us as well. Please do remember we have a contest going on our blog, so please go check that out at newworldwitchery.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm. And if you have any comments or questions, you can feel free to email us at compassandkey@gmail.com.
And that'll just about do it for this episode.
Thanks for listening.
Be well.
New World Witchery is recorded using GarageBand on Mac. The song you're listening to is Homebound by the artist Jag from Cypress Grove Blues. It can be found on Magnatune.com. Magnatune, your source for PodSafe music. Thanks for listening.